Tess Zion ER, Tuesday the 21st of May, Diane Doniel Schoenfeld, an employee who crashes his company car.
Good morning. And the usual disclaimer that if any of this becomes practically applicable, please refer to our competent halakhic authority.
You are the
a local Orthodox rabbi.
I'm pretty glad that the giant's not a competent.
Okay, the story goes like this. An employee is driving a company car for work purposes. He travels up and down the country. And on one such occasion, he's hungry, tired, and unfortunately in closed traffic, he crashes into the car in front of him. Not paying attention for a second, looks down, and he crashes the car in front of him. The car in front of him is badly damaged, a few thousand pounds worth. His own company car, initially he doesn't think it's very badly damaged, a few scratches on the outside. But when the mechanic has a look at it, he tells him that internally the computer is wrecked. And it's dangerous to drive, although it seems fine, the car, but he doesn't think that it's he doesn't think it's safe to drive. And to replace this computer is almost like replacing the whole car. It costs a fortune. So the employer tells the employee, I'm sorry, I'm not interested in claiming from my insurance for your lack of attention, and I want you to pay it yourself. And the employee's obviously not too happy, it's too much for him. He says that this amount of money is more than what I earn in a month. I can't pay this out. And in a strange twist of events, a few days later, the garage of the company suffers a break-in, and a few of the cars get stolen, and this car is one of them. Yeah, how could we... Sorry? Yeah. So the employee says, with his Toyin Rabbani, three reasons why he thinks he doesn't have to pay. Says the first reason is you've got insurance, and that's what insurance is there for. I didn't cause you any loss, because if you go to your insurance, they'll pay you back the full amount. So I didn't cause you any loss at all. Correct. So the premium, he says, perhaps I understand why I'll have to pay, and if that's the issue, then we can talk. But on the actual damage, why should I pay? There's no loss here. The second reason, he says, anyway, it got stolen. So had I not crashed the car, you anyway wouldn't have a car. So again, what loss have I caused you? Sorry? No, in the company garage. Sorry, I didn't make myself clear. It was in the company garage. These cars were put back in the evening. They were driven, put back in the evening. They were in the company garage and they would have been there anyway. So he says it would have been stolen anyway. And the final reason which the Toyin Rabbani comes up with is that there's a sugya called Hezek She'eino Nikar. I don't know if you're familiar with this. That although in the Torah a person is chayav to pay for damages, but if the damage is invisible, we'll call it that for the moment, it's indiscernible, then a person's not chayav if it's done by mistake. Sounds strange. Let's deal with that one first. Let's work through these tainas in reverse order. The final taina here was Hezek She'eino Nikar. It says, I don't need to pay you, because the main damage that was done to the company car was internal, and it's not visible. And that's called Hezek She'eino Nikar. So okay, the other car is visible, we'll sort that one out, but concerning the company car, I don't think I have to pay. What's this idea of Hezek She'eino Nikar, sorry? What's this idea of Hezek She'eino Nikar? The Mishnah in Gittin, Daf Nun Beis Amud Beis, says, Hamatame, v'hamadameya, v'hamanaseich, b'shoge yopota, b'mezid yochayev. What are these three cases? Hamatame, someone who takes someone else's trimmer, a kohen's trimmer, and he makes it tome. So tome, that becomes useless, right? The damage, though, to this trimmer, it's now tome, but it's not visible. It's not discernible. By looking at it, you can't tell that it's been damaged. It's only if you know that it's become tome that it's now useless. That's case number one. Case number two is that someone takes his own trimmer, and instead of damaging the trimmer, he now takes that trimmer, he mixes it into another person's chulin, another person's food. A regular person's food goes into someone's cupboard and he mixes in trimmer into their cookie tin, whatever it is. So now they can't eat their biscuits because some of them are trimmer, right? They don't know which ones are trimmer and which ones are not. So they can't eat them. Again, by looking at the biscuits, you can't tell any damage has happened. It just looks like a fuller tin. On the contrary, it looks like the person's giving you more. But if you know that some of it's truma, then none of it, it's all useless. Well, it's not quite useless. It can be sold to a kohen. A kohen could eat the whole lot because it's all truma. A kohen could eat it, but that's going to be less value than being able to sell it to anyone because there's less demand for that. And the final case is menasich in the Mishnah. Matame is the first case you make a tame. Madame is where you mix it together. And menasich. Menasich, the Rav in the Gemara explains it as the posh pshat, that you serve up some yayin to some wine to avodah zarah. You menasich, you use it for avodah zarah, serving avodah zarah. It becomes osa as yayin nesach. Shmuel though explains it that we're not menasich doesn't mean the poshut understanding that we would explain it to mean to Paul. Rather, it means that you took yayin nesach that had already been served to avodah zarah, and you mixed it with somebody else's normal ordinary wine. And now the whole barrel of wine becomes osa because it's mixed with yayin nesach. You can't use it. Now that's a bit strange because according to Shmuel, it explains that you've mixed the wines together. Isn't that the same as our biscuit case that we called medamea, where you just mixed truma? Those are two identical cases. Says Shmuel that correct. They are two identical cases. They're both mixing, and the damage caused by mixing. The reason why the Mishnah tells us both according to Shmuel is because all these things, really, all these cases, because they're indiscernible, because you can't tell, you can't see, it's not easily visible, the damage which has been caused, all these cases are potter. You really don't have to pay at all in the midoraisa, in the Torah. Just Chazal came, Chachomim said, and said you have to pay, as we'll see in a second. Chachomim said you have to pay. For which cases do you have to pay? Do you have to pay for all cases of indiscernible damage? Or do you only have to pay for the cases which are listed? Says Shmuel, you only have to pay for the exact cases which are listed. And therefore, although mixing biscuits of truma with regular biscuits is exactly the same as mixing a yayin nesach wine with ordinary wine, although those two things are seemingly identical, but if we wouldn't have listed both cases, you wouldn't have to pay for both cases. You'd only have to pay for the cases which are listed, specifically listed by Chazal. Therefore, although they're the same in damage, sorry, that shouldn't be me. Sorry, it's going. According to Shmuel, you only have to pay for the case which is specifically listed. Rav, who explained Yayin Nesach to mean that you're pouring the wine, disagrees, and he says, no. These three cases which are given in the Mishnah are just examples. Examples of damage which you can't see, and the Mishnah tells us if you do it b'shogeg, your potter, if you do it accidentally, your potter, if you do it b'mezid, intentionally, your chayev, that's what the Mishnah tells us. But those are just examples, and any such case of indiscernible damage, you're liable to pay for. How do we paskin? Well, the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Pei He brings the case of Yayin Nesech, I think, in Shin Pei He, in Choshen Mishpot. The Shach, though, says he brings the Rambam, who paskins like Rav, who again is the opinion who says that these three examples in the Mishnah are just examples, but any such case of damage which is not visible is really chayev if it's done for mezid, and potter if it's done for shogeg. Any such case. The Gemara lists other cases. Koyanim, who take a korban and make it pigul. Right? So now the owner of that korban, it's posel korban, the owner of that korban has to bring another korban. They've damaged the animal which belongs to him, but you can't tell, it's a regular shechita, you can't tell from it that it's been made pigul with a wrong thought while the koyan was doing it. That's another case which would be b'shoyeg potter, and b'mezid chayev. Another case is mechatos or poros chatos, korbanos which are used in a way that they shouldn't be used, but by looking at the animal you can't tell it's posel. Okay. Now when I say that, when the Mishnah says that b'shoyeg your potter, if you cause damage which you can't see, which is indiscernible, your potter, doesn't mean that everyone's allowed to go ahead and do it. In fact, Rabbi Yochanan says the reason, Rabbi Yochanan says, Dvar Torah, Midoraisa, these things are all potter. Why did they say that if you do it b'mezid yochayev, to make sure that people don't go around damaging other people's things in ways that you can't tell, mixing other people's yayin with yayin nesach, or doing other indiscernible damages? So we said that b'mezid yochayev, if you do it intentionally yochayev, that's all midrabonon. Says the Chacham Tzvi, that in Siman Tes, that you're still chayev lotzei sidei shamayim. Doesn't mean you get off the hook. You still cause somebody a loss. It just means if you come to Beis Din having caused indiscernible damage, Beis Din won't make you pay. Okay, that's the sugya of Hezek She'ena Nika. Okay, one further example.
Because it's like a spiritual, like
So we're not told the reason. The Chasam Sofer offers that he's medayik pesukim. The Gemara Rishonim don't tell us the reason why. The Yad Ramadish tells us that it's definitely awesome midoraita to do it. It's completely forbidden to do it. But we're not told why a person would be potter if he did do it. Chasam Sofer makes diyukim and pesukim.
Yeah, those examples are like examples where nothing was actually...
There was no physical change.
Yeah, nothing physical.
Yeah, okay, so we'll come to that. We'll come to that. Let me bring you one more example in the Gemara. And this is as follows. You have two fields adjacent one to the other. A field of a vineyard and a wheat field growing next to each other. Now we know Kalaya Kerem in Parashas Kedoshim, Pem Tuk Deshasama Leo, you're not allowed to have wheat growing in a vineyard. It becomes osa. So the vineyard owner has built a fence to prevent his vines from growing in, spreading into the wheat to make it osa. However, this fence is being breached, and the Gemara in Baba Basra Daf Beis and in Baba Kama Daf Kuf, this fence has a hole in it, and the vines start creeping through. And the vineyard owner fails to fix this hole. He doesn't fix it. And they grow together, the vine and the wheat grow together, the wheat becomes osa. Says the Brisa, the owner of the vineyard is chayiv to pay medina degarmi, he's caused a loss to the wheat field owner. This wheat now is osa. The vineyard owner will have to pay the wheat owner for his loss. Ask the Rishonim, why on earth is that not a case of Hezek She'ena Nika? If you look at the wheat, you can't see any vine in it. You take the kernels of wheat, can you see any vine growth? You can't. You just see a regular wheat. It's only if you know that it grew together with a vine that it became osa.
The climate is more physical, though.
It happens physically.
Climate is a physical damage.
The individual plant.
Is it? What do you mean it's a physical damage? Why is it a physical damage?
Because something...
It doesn't damage. The wheat is the same wheat it would have been had the vine not grown amongst it.
If it's perceptible but unmicroscopically, is that considered nicotine?
So we'll come to that. Very good question. But here it's not. Microscopically as well, it wouldn't be perceptible that the fact that it grew with a vine.
The
mixture, now they've been separated. They've been separated, the vine from the wheat. And you're just holding the wheat.
You would be able to discern in the wheat that there is the element.
Would you? Perhaps. I don't know. If that's true, then that would be an answer, perhaps. I'll tell you what the Rishonim answer. The Rishonim answer is as follows. Two answers are suggested. The Ramban answers, and he says, although by looking at the wheat, you can't see the vine, but you can see the extra centimetre that the wheat grew while the vine was mixed together with it. While the amount that the wheat grew, it has to grow together with the vine. So that growth is visible. So although the damage in that growth is not visible, but the growth itself, which is osa, that growth is what's osa. That is visible. That extra growth, which is now osa, which grew, but issa, is visible. That's what Ramban says. Since it grew, that is called the issa being visible, because that 1 centimetre grew, but issa, was created as osa, that 1 centimetre is visible. Tosas offers a different answer. And Tosas says, again in Baba Basra, Daf Beis on Beis, and in Baba Kama, he says that, although correct, the actual damage is not visible, but while the damage took place, it was discernible. That means while it was growing together, you could see there was a vine and a wheat field growing together. While it was taking place, the action that was happening was visible, was apparent. And therefore that's called Hezek Nika. Although the damage, the effect is not visible, the damage that was caused is not visible, but the action that caused the damage is visible. For Tosis, that's enough. As long as the action is visible, the action that causes the damage is visible, it's enough to call it Hezek Nika. What's a nafka minna between the Ramban and Tosfos? Let's speak at nafka minna. The Ramah in Yeridea, Shin Pei Tes, Sif Gimel, gives an example of a case where, unfortunately, a son of parents is nifta, and the parents, due to their distress, throw their cloth that they have at home, on top of this son of theirs who's been nifta. Now, clothes, big they may say, are surim bahano, they become osa bahano. And due to their distress, they're trying to make all their items osa. It's not worth it. They're so upset. An onlooker sees, and he removes... This is a Gemara in Sanhedrin in the 6th Perek. An onlooker sees, and he removes those clothes before they become osa, before they remain there for a amount of time. He removes them. Now, this onlooker who's removed those clothes has saved those clothes from becoming osa. Now, he's got two choices. He can either wait until the parents can make more calculated decisions at a later date and return those items, or he can return them immediately. And if he does return them immediately, and the parents, out of their distress, once again throw them onto the mace, and they become osa b'hanor, says the Ramah, this onlooker who returned them to the parents, causing the parents to make them osa again, will be chayiv to pay. He'll be chayiv to pay. Asks everyone, why you chayiv? Ask the shamish, or why are you chayiv? The clothes are the same clothes before or after. You can't see any damage that's happened to the clothes. They're just osa b'hanor. It's hezek she'ena nika. He didn't intentionally make them. That's b'shoigeg. He should be potter. He didn't intentionally cause them to become osa. He thought he was doing the right thing by giving it back to the parents. Nonetheless, says the Gemara, you're chayiv. Says the Shamish, but according to Tosfos, we can understand it. According to Tosfos, who says that as long as the action you're doing, the action that causes the damage, is visible, is apparent that it will cause the damage, then although the actual damage is not apparent, is not visible, you'll still be chayav. Says the Shamish, but it's obvious in that situation, the parents have just thrown it onto the son and you remove it and give it back, the parents will just throw it on again, they're still in the same... same level of distress as they were.
The time he gave it back, they hadn't thrown it yet.
Correct, which is a very interesting point. I agree with that, and that's a very valid point. There's what to discuss there, absolutely. The Shal Mishpat is connecting his action with the parents and saying it was a direct, almost like a direct action of putting it on top of the mace because it was certainly going to happen. That's how he's looking at it. Correct, I agree with your order. That's an afkamina brought by the Shal Mishpat. A further nafkamina brought by Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld in Teres Chaim, in Simon Chofei, he writes, you know, if a person sleeps on top of food, it becomes also, you can't eat it, right? So you take someone else's food, someone else has food under their bed, and that person was going to remove it before you went to sleep, and you take a nap on the person's bed, causing the food to become osa to eat now. Can't use his food. Or at least he won't want to use his food. Many people won't want to use that food. So, says Rabbi Yosef Chaim Sonnenfeld, it's also toila on this. That damage which has been caused to the food which is under the bed, again, is not visible. It's understandable. It's a ruchni, it's a spiritual type of hezek, type of damage. You can't see it. That's hezek she'ena nika. You did it b'shoigeg. You slept on the bed. You didn't intend to damage the food underneath. B'shoigeg, you should be potter. But according to Tosfos, who says that as long as the action is discernible, when you do the action, as long as the action can be seen, you can a clear connection between the action and the damage that happened at the time when you did the action. Well, when this person went to sleep and the food was underneath, it's very clear that the food will become osa. And therefore, that will be called hezek nika. Although the damage, the effect is not visible, but the action is apparent that it's going to cause the damage, that's enough for Tosfos to be osa.
I think the examples in the Gemara are completely osa b'anur.
Yeah. For Dieved, you can use it. There's what to discuss. Yosef Chaim goes into that discussion. Correct. Yeah. Now, moving on to a classic case of in America recently where many people didn't vaccinate, they had this outbreak of measles and someone would affect another area or person. Would they be chayav? The case of the yeshiva bocha who's ill, you may have heard these stories. The yeshiva bacha who breaks into a kitchen, tastes some of the food, later that day finds out that he's contagiously infected with some sort of virus, lets the yeshiva Anhola know out of guilt, because he doesn't want the whole yeshiva to get ill. And Anhola say, well, we don't know what you touched and what you didn't touch. We have to chuck the whole lot out, order a new food, 100 portions. That's going to cost a lot of money. Please pay up. So is he chayv or not? He did it b'shoigeg, right? He broke in, was b'mezid, but the fact that he damaged the food, the fact that he caused this great damage to all the food was b'shoigeg. Does he have to pay or not? So that lechor is hezek she'ena nika. And at the time when he ate the food, it also wasn't apparent that he was damaging the food because you can't see that he's ill. He didn't know himself that he was ill. So according to Tosfos and the Ramban, everyone should say that you're potter for such a case b'shoigeg.
He knew he was infected.
He did not. At that time he did not know. No, he did not know. Says Rav Shlomo Zalman Orbach in Mincha Shlomo that germs, and this is a point that was mentioned earlier, under a microscope are visible. And although to the naked eye may not be visible, it may not be easily tangible, but seeing as they are visible under a microscope, there's a physical change that's taken place, that doesn't fall into the category of hezek she'ena nika. Once a physical change has taken place, then although you can't see that physical change, the examples in the Gemara, as was being said, are more ruchni. They make things tomei, they make things posel, they make things osa. Those type of things are not physical changes, they're halachic changes. Halachic changes, if a person does that, b'shoigeg, he'll be potter for causing it. But physical changes, whether they can be seen or they can't be seen, a person's liable in the same way that a person's liable for any damage that they cause, whether they do it b'shoigeg or b'mezid. We know, in Bava Kama, Daf Chav Vav Amud Beis, echot shoig bein b'shoigeg bein b'mezid, however we cause damage, we are odom mod l'olam. A person has to pay for what he damages. Therefore, contaminating food with a virus, with this infection, would be is a physical change, says Rosh Hashanah Zalman, and a person would be chayv even b'shoigeg. Coming to our case of the car, it should be obvious now that whether this damage is under the car or above the car, it makes no difference. Because it's physical, it's a physical change. It can be in a computer, it can be deleting files from a computer would be the same thing. It's a physical change, although you can't see it when the computer's closed. But it's a physical change, and you'll be chayef for that. That's hezek gomor, chayef. So taina number 3 of this Torah Rabbani, we can disregard. Going to taina number 2, he said that the car was stolen anyway afterwards. So I didn't cause any loss, because it would have been stolen anyway. The Gemara in Bava Kama, Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, says, Rabbo says, Hazorik kli mirosh hagag, someone who throws an item from a roof, comes and he breaks it, someone else comes, and while this item is falling through the air, smashes the item, he's potter. The second person is potter. Why? Mona tevira tova. We look at the item as it's falling through the air as already being broken. And therefore the second person is not chai. This is pasna aloch and shim pei vovin, choshe mishpot, sif talet. The Ramban adds even the first person's chayiv, actually, astoundingly. Because the first person didn't break it. Although he threw it and it was going to break, he had never actually broke it. The second person broke it, but it was anyway going to break. The Ramban says, but the halacha, we say the first person's chayiv pashtas, and the second person is potter. So, is our car similar to that? It was anyway going to get stolen. When I crashed the car, it was anyway going to get stolen. I think the distinction is obvious. At the time when you crashed the car, it wasn't going to get stolen. It wasn't falling through into the thief's hands, right? It wasn't in the process of being stolen. The car was crashed and then it was stolen. That's two separate things that can't be compared to an item which is already in the process of being broken.
So okay. Does it matter that they're two different actions?
What do you mean?
Let's say it would be like more similar if you hit someone's car and someone else
afterwards. Oh, no, that doesn't make a difference, because here as well, someone's thrown it and someone's come with a stick and smashed it.
Both of them are like making a bullet that breaks them.
Mm-hmm. Says Tosfos, very good. Says Tosfos in Daf Yud Zayin Amud Beis, that what happens if someone were to shoot an arrow at a item? And by the time the arrow, if the arrow were to hit that item, the item would shatter, the item would break. But before that arrow gets there, someone comes and smashes the item. So this is slightly different to the Gemara's case. The item's not in the process of falling. It's not in a... It itself has not changed its situation from being on a safe shelf to now being in the air, which is... It's going to break. It's still on its shelf, but it will break in a few seconds because an arrow's being shot at it. Someone comes and breaks it. Is he chayav or potter? Tosfos says that the second person who breaks it is actually chayav there. Because there the item, although it will break... It hasn't changed at all at the moment. And when the second person comes and breaks it, he's the one who changed its status into being broken. It was inevitable. It was inevitable because the arrow was on target and was certainly going to hit. Nonetheless, since the item itself hasn't changed, its state... I'm not sure how to put this into English, but it's matzov.
If it falls from the roof, it's inevitable it's going to break.
Correct.
This thing shot at by the arrow is not inevitable because someone can take it away.
Oh. No, let's assume it can't be. It's fixed. It's fixed to the place in a way that would take 10 minutes to remove, right? And it's a laser where there's no scientific way of stopping. No, that's not the point. The point is Tosfos is talking about in a case where it is definitely going to break. To find a scenario, we can build around. Tosfos' scenario is that it's definitely going to break from the arrow that was shot at it. Someone else comes and smashes it before the arrow breaks it. Tosfos says the second person is chayav because the item matzav hasn't changed. The item is not a broken item. You can't look at it as a mona tevira. It's not, because when it comes down, the item has changed its situation, its matzah. So from being in a safe place, it's now being... As soon as it's released, we look at it as being broken. Here, the item hasn't been released. He released his arrow. Why should we change the status of the item? Because the arrow's been released. The Rosh, however, argues on this point, and he says, like you, the Ketos brings it in Shimvov, that the Rosh argues that it's the same as the thing coming down. Because they're both inevitably going to break, he would also be Potter in that case. Now, yeah? Is our case of the crash similar to this? Was it inevitably going to be stolen? I think here's where your argument kicks in, where perhaps the thief would have changed his mind. Perhaps he would have chosen a different car. You never know what would have happened. So again, that's not similar. And the person should be chayav for crashing the car. I can't argue just because later it got broken, now I should be Potter. Right, that's clearly evident from the Gemara. The Rosh Hashanah were only happy to say up to the point where it's inevitable that it's going to broke. Just because it happens to be that it broke later will not be a reason to putter somebody now. Right? If someone breaks someone's item, then the whole house burns down. That doesn't exempt the person who damaged the items before the fire took place. Finally, the first argument that was presented, and that was the insurance one. Since you've got insurance, you should have to pay. Now, this is a very interesting topic. It's dealt with... The postman, lot. What exactly is insurance? How do we look at it? But I'll just jump to the Chelkas Yov with the Marsham, who says that of course, although the employer, he doesn't talk about a case of an employer, he talks about anyone who has an insurance policy and someone else causes damage to the item which is the insured item. Of course, damage has taken place. The owner of the item has his own business deal with the insurance company that if anything happens, he pays them monthly in a way that if anything happens to his item, he can recoup those losses. He can recover he can ask for a payment. But that doesn't mean that the person who's caused the damage hasn't caused a loss. He has caused a loss. The owner of the item is now able, with his own deal that he's made with the insurance company, to recover those losses.
Okay, sure.
Yeah, they discussed that. Should he have to pay? If the insurer's Jewish, does he have to... Is that Grom or Garmi? Where does that fit into the post? Can the post talk about it? Yeah. And therefore, I think we would all say it as much, that the fact that there's insurance does not exempt the damager from paying. However, our case is slightly different in that we're discussing an employee. And when it comes to employees, one has to take into account what the accepted custom is, what accepted practice is, employers to employees vis-a-vis damages that the employee causes. What happens? And if the minhag is, if the accepted custom is that an employer will claim from his insurance, even though the employee was at fault for causing the damage. But it was a crash, and these things happen. He's tired, end of a long day, these things happen. If the accepted custom is, accepted practice is for the employer to claim, although there'll be a hike in his premium, and although it may cause him to lose his no claims, or whatever it will be, but if that's the custom, then at the time when he hired, at the time of engagement, when he hired his employee, it was done on the basis that if you cause me any damage in XYZ ways, which the custom is the employer will sort out himself, then you won't be liable. That's at the time of employment, time of engagement, that agreement is set in place. Now, a few years later, when the employee's been working for this employer, the employer could theoretically say, forget the deal we made 2 years ago, I'm now telling you, you can only continue working for me if you'll pay your damages. He's entitled to do that. He made an agreement, he was moichel any damages, he says that I'll pay for the damages. At any point in the future he can say, I've changed my mind, I want you to pay for the damages. But that's only up until the point where the damage has been done. Once the damage has been done, at that point that the employee caused the damage, the employer has putted him. And when that damage was putted, if the employer 2 weeks later or 2 days later comes and says, no, I've changed my mind, it's too late. You can change your mind for the future, but you can't change your mind for the past. And therefore, if the minhag Medina is that employees in this case, I think it was accepted that employees do claim from their insurance, then although all the previous reasons may not apply, but the minhag Medina would tell us that the employer would have to claim from his insurance.